Hello and welcome to the Theology Mill podcast brought to you by Whipfenstock Publishers. My name is Zach Mickle. I am the digital marketing manager here at Whipfenstock, and I'm also the host of this podcast, which consists of interviews with leading authors and thinkers in theology, biblical studies, and philosophy. If you like what you're hearing on our podcast, come stop by our website at whipfenstock.com, where you can browse our catalog and also check out our blog. So you're listening right now to the third and final episode in our Potochka booth. The Potochka booth is a series of interviews on the Czech philosopher and dissident Jan Potochka, who lived from 1907 to 1977. The interviews explore his philosophical and political thought, his biography and context, as well as his import for theology, which we get into especially in this last episode. So in this episode, I speak with Dr. Martin Kocsi. Professor Kocsi is associate professor at KU Linz, Austria. He is the author of Christianity After Christendom, Heretical Essays in Philosophical Theology, which just published, as well as the award-winning Thinking Faith After Christianity, a theological reading of Jan Potochka's Phenomenological Philosophy, which published in 2020. Martin is also the editor of numerous volumes, the most recent of those being God and Phenomenology, Thinking with John-Yves Lacoste, which just published with us at Cascade. And also, as a side note, we mention in this episode that Martin Kocsi's book, Christianity After Christendom, will be publishing in a couple weeks. We also say that it will be publishing in October. The reason for that is we recorded this episode in October, and then so you should know that that book is now published and available for purchase on Amazon, as well as on the publisher's website. So with that, thank you so much for listening, and I want to say that I hope you really enjoy this conversation. All right, so I am here with Dr. Martin Kocsi, who is an assistant professor at KU Linz in Austria. And so we are sharing some time together today transatlantically for our Potochka booth. So before we get started, Martin, could you just tell us a bit about yourself, maybe what you do, as well as how you came to study Jan Potochka?
Hello to everyone. Thank you for having me on Potochka booth. As you have already said, I'm an assistant professor of fundamental and dogmatic theology at KU Linz in Austria. That means by training, I'm a theologian. I did my PhD at KU Leuven in Belgium. And actually, the main theme of my dissertation was a theological reading of Jan Potochka. And how I got to Potochka, that was actually very simple. I was very much interested as a theology student in the so-called theological turn in contemporary phenomenology or in continental philosophy in general. And I was meditating several possible avenues how to research this topic in my dissertation. And at one moment, my promoter, Lieven Buwe, told me, yes, you can do it. You can research the theological turn in contemporary phenomenology or philosophy, and you can work on Derrida or Marion or any other main figure of this theological turn, but then you will be another one in row. What about to do something original? And then I got this idea that it could be possible to read Jan Potochka, who is a philosopher of phenomenological orientation, alongside this theological turn. This is how the story started, and since then Jan Potochka hasn't left me.
great. Okay, so kind of our icebreaker question then, to kick us off, if you could place three figures all together in a room with Jan Potochka, so he's already in there, and then three other figures, and you could listen to their conversation, who would you choose to put in that room and why?
This is an interesting question. I think one of those three other figures would be Immanuel Falk, a contemporary French phenomenologist and theologian. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I would choose Immanuel Falk is not only because I'm researching currently on Immanuel Falk, his concept of finitude and what it brings or could potentially bring to theology, So I would be very much interested about the dynamic between Jan Patočka and Emmanuel Falk, two figures who share the same phenomenological tradition, who share sometimes more, sometimes less interest in theology, but who are very different characters. Must be said, because Emmanuel Falk is very enthusiastic philosopher, thinker, theologian, perhaps. And Jan Patočka was a man of letters of mm-hmm. a very classical kind. So that means he was really like the next Socrates, just living in the 20th century. So that would be my choice. But then to put other two, to make it four, in the room. So I would choose Roger Scruton, a conservative philosopher from England who died not long time ago, and then as a sparring partner to him, Jacques Derrida. And why? Because Roger Scruton, as I already said, was a kind of conservative philosopher, and Derrida was rather on the left side of the intellectual spectrum, so to say. But both of them found a profound inspiration in the work of Jan Patočka. And I think this is something very interesting about Patočka, something understudied yet, that Jan Patočka is, and his work, his thought, is able to inspire people of different political opinions, of different, religious opinions, people who stand on different sides of the intellectual barricade, so to say, and that's something I find interesting. I don't know why it is so. Maybe because Jan Patočka stood with his own life behind his ideas and his thought. But yeah, I would love to hear this conversation between Jan Patočka and Roger Scruton on the one hand, and Jacques Derrida on the other hand, and see all tensions and different interpretations from different points of view. So that would be my choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like a very lively conversation. And no, I would definitely confirm what you're saying about Emmanuel Falk. He's a friend of ours on the Theology Mill, and at Wippenstock, he recently published a book with us, and we've had him on the Theology Mill, and he certainly is a very enthusiastic person. Yeah, that's interesting, Roger Scruton and Jacques Derrida, because both of them pretty frequently visited the underground seminars in Czechoslovakia in the 80s, right?
That's right.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I don't know to what extent or if they interacted much as they were doing that, because I've read a book, Barbara Day's book, I think is mm-hmm. called The Velvet Philosophers or something like that.
Yes.
And in that book, she almost makes it sound like kind of each nation was independently sending scholars. So there was kind of a movement of French scholars that were going over to Czechoslovakia, and then a movement of English philosophers. But I'm not sure to what extent they coordinated or if those two interacted at all. Yeah, it'd be very interesting to know.
I don't think they interacted. I think they were there at different times, on different occasions, and most likely they never met during those days in Prague or also in other Czech cities where underground seminars were organized. And actually, that's also the link to Jan Patočka, who was kind of a figure of underground seminars in the 1970s, after he was for the third time kicked out from the university. So that's also actually a nice bridge between Derrida, Scruton, and Patočka, and why this conversation would be not only lively and enjoyable, but definitely they would have some common background to share.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so let's turn to Patočka himself. So tell me a bit about who Jan Patočka was, particularly for listeners who may not be familiar with him or terribly familiar with him and his work. And maybe, you could share just kind of what were some of the major events of his life, and maybe any kind of you know, if there were intellectual twists and turns to his biography as well. But just, yeah, who was Jan Patočka, and what were some of the major moments in his life?
Jan Patočka was probably the most influential and important Czech philosopher of the 20th century. He was born in 1907, died 1977. So one can tell that during these 70 years of his life, he lived through almost every breaking event of the European history in the 20th century. So he experienced the First World War, then he experienced, as a young intellectual, the interwar period of Czechoslovakia, newly created state with huge ambitions, intellectual, political, economical. Then he saw how it all collapsed in the wake of the Second World War, and this kind of war experience was very influential later for him in his perhaps the most known work, Heretical Essays in the Philosophy of History, written then in 1970s. But then, to go back to a personal history of Patočka, during the Second World War, he was not able to teach as a philosopher at the university, because all universities in occupied countries, the countries occupied by Nazi Germany, were closed. So Jan Patočka was not able to act as a philosopher. And then after the war, when he re-entered university, very soon after the communist coup in 1948 in Czechoslovakia, he was kicked out from the university again because of his, let's say, political opinions, his allegiance to the former Czechoslovakian state. And then when he re-entered the university in 1960s during a period of the so-called Prague Spring, which was perceived, especially in the West, as a certain democratization, liberalization of the communist regime. Then after he experienced in 1968 the Soviet occupation of Czechoslovakia, and again at the beginning of the 70s, he was kicked out from the university again. So he experienced this three times. Still, he didn't give up to be a philosopher, and perhaps his most important work was created during the years when he was not able actually to act as a philosopher. One funny story is said about Patočka, that during the Second World War, when he was not allowed to teach at the university or to act as an academic philosopher at the university, he spent most of his time in the National Library in Prague and read pretty much everything from philosophy. So, there were better moments of this non-activity or this impossible activity of being a philosopher, and then much worse moments later during the time of communism when he was actually... he was under surveillance, and he was perceived as a person who is dangerous, not because of his powers or strengths, but because of his intellectual capabilities, because of his links to the international intellectuals and so on. And actually, in 1977, the year when Patočka died, he also died after long hours lasting interrogation from the side of the secret police. About a week after this interrogation, he died, because Patočka was involved in Charter 77, which was in the 70s in a very important civic movement. And he was one of the spokespersons of this civic movement. So he was really a philosopher who lived through many experiences, and his ideas and his thoughts mirror his life. So this is his life story in a nutshell. Then if we go to his intellectual background, Jan Patočka was a phenomenologist. He was one of the last direct disciples of Edmund Husserl. He had also a chance in the 1930s to study a short time with Heidegger in Germany. He was in regular contact with Eugen Fink, also another former, also a student of Husserl. And the primary focus of for Patočka was phenomenology. And he is also known for developing both Husserlian and Heideggerian ideas further. But next to phenomenology, he was a philosopher of a very classical school. So as I've said, he knew pretty much everything. He read pretty much everything. So during those years when he was teaching at the university, he was able to teach about the ancient, the Greek philosophy. And of course, Socrates, Plato, there were and Aristoteles as well. Those three figures were his heroes. So yeah, he was really a kind of man of letters. Perhaps today it's impossible to repeat such a kind of broad scope when we do philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did he ever have trouble publishing his work? Like, was he able to kind of publish his work publicly throughout his life, or given kind of all the geopolitical tumult he was living within, and kind of all the exiles he suffered from the academy, was he forced ever to kind of publish underground with like the Samizdat movement that was going on in Czechoslovakia during, I think, it, you know, 70s and 80s maybe? I guess, to what extent was he having to kind of publish underground, or was he able to publish things more publicly?
I'm not exactly sure whether he was unable to publish in Czech, like totally banned. But what's certainly true that he didn't publish a lot, and he actually wrote many drafts, many notes. He started with many projects which never saw the light of the world, so to say, during his lifetime. Now we have the collected writings of Jan Patočka, and many of those writings, many of those, virtually complete works on dedicated to different themes and topics were not published during his lifetime. And some of his other influential works, for instance, Heretical Essays in the Philosophy of History, Patočka started to write this particular book in German, because it was intended to be published in Germany. So yeah, he had certainly some difficulties. He wasn't a regular publishing philosopher in Czech or in any other journals internationally. From time to time, he was able to publish. In 1960s, he published something. But yeah, some of his works were actually written and hidden. And only now, years or decades after his death, we have edited versions of this. Of these works, and we can use them for research.
Okay. So turning to his work, or just a closer kind of consideration of his work, what would you say are some of kind of the key themes in Patočka's writing?
So one important theme for Patočka is the philosophy of history, and Paul Ricoeur also says there are two main focal points in Patočka's work. That's philosophy of history, and then the so-called asubjective phenomenology. What does it mean? It means that Patočka, as I said, he was a direct student or descendant of Husserl and Heidegger, and he had a great ambition to develop phenomenology further, to write another chapter to the tradition of phenomenological philosophy. And he did. He developed something what scholars call asubjective phenomenology, which is an attempt actually to combine both Husserlian and Heideggerian insights together. But then, because of his life story, because of all those experiences about which we have already talked, Patochka couldn't be just an academic philosopher or a phenomenologist in his ivory tower. He had this desire, this inner desire that his thought, his writing would have some impact on the lived experience, which he studied as a phenomenological philosopher. That means that he naturally turned to the theme of philosophy of history, to the question whether history has a meaning, to the question, what does it mean to be in the world as a person who experience finitude, who experience questions concerning meaningfulness or meaninglessness of being. So those would be his two main focal points: philosophy of history and phenomenology. And of course, he also wrote interpretative books on philosophy in antiquity, on Aristotle, on Plato, even though his works on Plato reinterpret and reread Plato in a new fashion from his own perspective of living and being a phenomenological philosopher. So yeah, his scope was quite broad, but I would say really philosophy of history and a subjective phenomenology or phenomenology in general would be two main focal points of his body of work.
Sure. That's great to know as far as the kind of the broadness of his scope. Would you describe him as a pretty systematic thinker, or is his work kind of more scattershot? Yeah, to what extent did he have sort of like a project, I guess, is my question. That he saw as unifying the whole, or was it kind of more scattershot?
This is a great question. In one sentence, Patochka was not systematic at all. That's the problem for us scholars when we want to read Patochka, because you start somewhere and then you think, okay, this is very interesting what he thinks about history, what he thinks about the meaning of history, and you read, for instance, Heretical Essays, and of course it's one of his major works, but then you don't understand perhaps certain passages, certain parts, why he's saying so, what's this argument about, because Patochka was constantly working on many fronts. I would say he was starting new projects, and it's difficult to say that this is his opus magnum. There is no such a thing. For instance, the well-known Heretical Essays, it's a tiny book of 100 pages. It's really six essays published together, but then it's kind of result of his life work. He had been interested in philosophical history since the very, very beginning of his intellectual life. And when one reads, for instance, his early writings, which are not in majority translated into English, some of those writings are available in German or in French, but in English is access to these texts quite limited. So the thing is, there you can see so many ideas which will be developed later in his work, but his work is not systematic at all. So when one wants to study, for instance, a subjective phenomenology, or my topic, Patochka's relationship to Christianity and theology, one has really to go text after text and look for little notes, little hints to complete the picture. I said a subjective phenomenology, but there is nothing like a book on a subjective phenomenology written by Patochka. You have to somehow put it all together. And so no, he's not a systematic thinker, even though he's very influenced by the German tradition. So his thinking is very profound, and it's not easy to understand his writings, even for us who speak and read Patočka's mother tongue, Czech. Yeah, sometimes it's very, very difficult actually to decode what is this section about. But it's difficult to systematize his work.
Sure. Yeah. And one of the themes in his work, which one of the many themes, which is maybe not treated as central necessarily, I think, by a lot of interpreters, is his relationship to religion and his relationship to Christianity specifically, which is kind of a question you take up in your really wonderful book, Thinking Faith After Christianity. Subtitle is A Theological Reading of Jan Patočka's Phenomenological Philosophy, which I'm assuming is a revision or a reworking of your dissertation. But yeah, what would you say is Jan Patočka's relationship with Christianity? What, like, was he himself a Christian? And but then also, did his views on the Christian faith kind of change at all throughout the course of his life and his writing?
Mm-hmm. So Jan Patočka was baptized in the Catholic Church. Then after the collapse of Austro-Hungarian Empire and the creation or the erection of Czechoslovakia, he left the church officially for some time, but then he returned, which is kind of event from his life about which we don't have many information or any specific records. We just know that at one point he officially left the church and Christianity, and then he so-called returned to the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. But one has to say he was not practicing at all, never. He was officially baptized. He somehow belonged to the Christian religion, one can say that, but he was not practicing Christian. So his views on Christian faith is really informed, or to put it other way around, the way he looks at Christianity is really the way of a philosopher looking at Christianity. Mm-hmm. And it's true that it's not perceived, this theme is not perceived to be the center of Patočka's thought. And it certainly is not the center. It is not the obvious center of his work. But if you read all his writings from the beginning to the end, or perhaps not all of them, but if you read through the different periods of his intellectual life, you can see that the theme of religion, and in particular the theme of Christianity, or the question of Christianity, never left him. He was always somehow interested in Christianity as a religion. But yeah, when I say religion, I should perhaps say more that he was more interested in Christianity as a certain way of life, a certain philosophy which is practiced. So faith as a way of being in the world, as a way of inhabiting the world. And yes, I would say his views developed throughout his life, and I'm sure we will touch up on that a bit more during our conversation. But yeah, one can say that his relationship to Christianity is somehow similar to some philosophers of the French so-called theological turn. They can't stop talking about Christianity. Some of them can't stop to talk about theology, and some of them come from the Catholic background, some of them not. All of them refuse to be theologians, at least they say it explicitly. But yeah, implicitly, I as a theologian can work with their writings. And that's same with Patočka. That applies to his work as well. And that's why I think it's so useful for me as a theologian to read his work and try to reread it theologically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you're saying, I mean, Patočka is certainly not a theologian, but, you know, kind of as you're alluding to, he in some ways he may be similar to some of the thinkers in the theological turn in contemporary phenomenology and just continental philosophy in general, in that he at least does devote attention to kind of this relationship between philosophy and theology. You know, he devotes you know, considerable space and, you know, in his writing to this relationship. So what did he see exactly, or how did he kind of figure the relationship between these two disciplines?
It's actually very interesting that the very first published essay which Patočka wrote was entitled Philosophy and Theology. So one can say he opened his career as a philosopher with this little essay, which is marked by his youth, by his enthusiasm. It's a polemical essay. It's a kind of reply to one of his friend. It is a reply to a Protestant theologian who was arguing for a stronger integration between philosophy and theology. And Patočka, at that point of his life, in his 20s, basically, says, no, there is no such a thing as philosophia ancilla theologia, so philosophy as the handmaiden of theology. It's just not true. And he's very resolute about this distinction between philosophy and theology. But also this opinion, I would say, develops. And in a text published maybe 20 years later, Patočka, I would say, praises theology and says that theology is one of the most difficult ways of thinking. And I think then he never became a theologian. He knew theology of his time. He knew main debates in theology about the mythologization and other later about secularity and theology and so on. And he was interested in theology, but of course he didn't write any theology of his own. What he was mainly interested was Christianity as a kind of lived experience. And I think then we can say there is no theology in Patočka, but from his thought, we theologians or philosophers of religion, we can draw some inspiration to write philosophy of religion or to write theology or something I would not hesitate to call theology.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You mentioned in your book that your reading of Patočka is somewhat unique in that you are reading him alongside or even maybe within kind of this theological turn in French phenomenology. So looking at kind of, you know, particular figures like, you know, ones you've mentioned, Jean-Luc Marion, Emmanuel Fauque, but also, Jean-Yves Lacoste and others as well. Now, Patočka, of course, did kind of precede these figures to an extent, right? As you said, he died in 1977, and this kind of theological turn, this movement really, it seems, sort of took off, you know, in France in the 80s, as you say in your book, right, kind of with the publication of one of Marion's books. But what, in what ways do you see Patočka's thinking bearing any kind of resemblances or similarities to what some of those figures in the theological turn are up to in their work?
That's a wonderful follow-up to your previous question about Patočka relationships about Patočka's opinion concerning the relationship between philosophy and theology. Because, before answering concretely what are resemblances to this group of French thinkers, I would like to say that Patočka and the theological turn, it's a very interesting thing, because as I said, Patočka never felt to be a theologian. He never wanted to be a theologian, and I'm sure that he maintained the border between two disciplines in place. But on the other hand, Patočka never hesitated to venture into the field which is nowadays covered by these authors of the theological turn. And nobody suspected that Patočka is a theologian. Nobody suspected that his ideas about Christianity is kind of crypto theology, as it is case, for instance, with Jean-Luc Marion, Emmanuel Levinas, etc., who were accused by Dominique Jeannicot to commit actually this heresy of the theological term. And I think that's precisely because of the date of Patočka's death. He died in 1977, before this entire debate about the theological turn, this mostly formal debate about the theological turn, whether it happened, whether it didn't happen, whether it should have happened, what does it mean that it happened or shouldn't have happened or happened, I don't know. I'm already lost in this formal debate, whether Marion is a theologian or philosopher enough or theologian enough. So Patočka was not part of this chaos, so to say. So he was quite open as a philosopher to reading and reinterpreting certain questions, which are not only philosophical questions, but also questions interesting for theologians. And I think this is the resemblance of Patočka with Marion, Lacoste, and Falk. All those thinkers are philosophers, or they say we are primarily philosophers, and all those thinkers are also interested, some of them because of their personal life stories, some of them because it's just very appearing topic in theological questions or in questions of theological importance, I would rather say. And this is it. This is it. And the thing about Patočka and this, and his situation outside this debate, whether he is a crypto theologian or not, the thing is he's quite free. He asks questions, for instance, the question of sacrifice, the question of a certain kind of Christianity for his time. And he's doing it quite openly in terms that he's not afraid to be accused of being a theologian. And in the work of Marion and others, you can, more contemporary authors, you can sometimes sense this need to defend their philosophical identities. And Patočka didn't have this need. And that means, in my reading of Patočka, that sometimes his solution, sometimes his meditation on certain topics more original or more appealing to me as a theologian, as of those authors of the theological turn in French phenomenology.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, and it does seem like his remarks about Christianity are often quite cryptic. You note this in your book many times, how difficult, and you noted this earlier too, how difficult, I mean, just in general, how difficult he can be to read, but also, you know, some of the things he says about Christianity, it's quite difficult to understand what he means by them. But again, perhaps, you know, as you were saying, if we kind of look and comb over his entire kind of oeuvre, perhaps we can start to kind of piece together his views on this religion, which is, you know, in many respects, kind of what you've done in your book. So in his heretical essays, for instance, he writes, I'm going to quote here, "Christianity remains thus far the greatest, unsurpassed, but also unthought through human outreach that enabled humans to struggle against decadence." So how do you kind of go about interpreting this statement, which seems pretty enigmatic, but you know, perhaps more specifically, what do you think he means here when he uses this phrase "unthought through"?
Yeah, this sentence, this quote from Heretical Essays haunts me, and I can leave it behind. I remember that during the defense of my PhD thesis, which is the previous version of my book, Thinking Faith After Christianity, one of my correctors told me that I cited this single sentence about 8 times or 9 times in the whole thing. So, and this sentence is still with me. In a couple of weeks, my second book, Christianity After Christendom, will appear on the market. And that's not a book about Patočka, but basically I can say it's a book about this sentence. And it's my attempt actually to understand what this sentence could mean, what this Patočka sentence could mean for us in today's world. And yeah, so of course, at first sight, one notices that Patočka esteems Christianity for something here. Christianity is important. He doesn't talk about theology. He doesn't talk about any content of Christianity here. But still, he says there is something important, even more radical. It's the greatest unsurpassed, but also unfold through human outreach. That's Kohak's translation. I don't like this translation. I rather say it's the greatest unsurpassed, but also unfold elan that enabled humans to struggle against decadence. And I think, yeah, in this sentence, the inspiration we can take from Patočka is condescend. Really, it's his thought about Christianity in a nutshell. And what I find interesting there, and what I've tried to develop in my coming book, Christianity After Christendom, with the subtitle Heretical Essays in Philosophy, in Philosophical Theology. So the reference to Patočka is obvious, of course. What I find in this sentence intriguing is that Patočka sees Christianity as something what equips human beings with certain faculties and capabilities, namely to struggle against decadence. And I think this is what's greatest and unsurpassed, but also unthought through in Christianity. Christianity, in Patočka's view, or the way I'm inspired by Patočka, Christianity is a certain mode of being, certain way of existence, certain movement of being in the world, certain way how we grapple with being thrown into this world, which is full of problematicity, full of questions, full of meaninglessness. And we have to struggle for meaning. We have to struggle not to give up. Just the very first experience of being human, the experience of finitude, today very well described by Emmanuel Falk, for instance. It's something what makes us unsettle, what makes us to shake, what makes us to be shaken, which is another term of Patočka. So Christianity, I think, not because of its religious content, but because of its existential content, it's something what, in Patočka's opinion, allows human beings somehow to process this experience, this naked experience of being in the world, including the experience of finitude, including all the questions about meaning of history and human life. And very important thing for Patočka in this is in this reference to Christianity is that, in contrast to philosophy, which requires presupposes or postulates certain reflection on all those realities, on all the problematicity of the world, finitude, etc., Christianity as a kind of lived reality is open to everyone. In other words, one doesn't have to be or become an intellectual to come in terms with all this unsettling and shaking being on which he or she partakes. And this is why Christianity has never ceased to be important for Patočka. And this is how I actually read or reread, reinterpret this sentence, that it says us that Christianity is a very important way or movement of life from which we can learn how to handle, how to grapple with our finitude, with our questions, with our problems, without intellectualizing, without rationalizing this problem, these questions too much. Of course, I'm an academic theologian, so I'm now saying it in many words, in many concepts, perhaps. But Christianity as such is a space and time, I would say as well, which incorporates certain practices, certain lived experiences, which fulfill the ideal, the ancient ideal of care for the soul.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, just a couple of follow-up questions on this quotation, which, yeah, as we've said, is enigmatic, but perhaps also very rich. You said you prefer to interpret this instead of as outreach, but instead as kind of the greatest unsurpassed, but also unthought through elan. Is that a French word? What does that word mean?
Yeah. It comes from French, and I think that Henri Bergson, whom Patočka read, certainly talks about elan vital. I would talk about the force of life, something like that, something what keeps us going despite everything. In the original of this sentence, in the Czech original of this sentence, it's not human outreach or human elan. It's just simply elan. It's just simply this, I would say, movement, this force which we have before we think about it. But we have to find a space and time how to live through it, how to somehow incorporate it into our existence. And this is this elan, this force of life, this movement of life, enable us humans to struggle against decadence. That means against giving up, against living in decadence. For Patočka is unreflected life. But as I've said, in Christianity, you can live the ideal of reflected life without being an intellectual, without becoming a philosopher. And I think this is the greatest achievement of Christianity for Patočka, that what Plato, at one point he says, at one point in Heretical Essays, Patočka mentions that Nietzsche is right, that Christianity is a Platonism for masses. But he means it positively. Yeah? It's a positive interpretation for Patočka. Yeah? It's a good thing that we have something which enables everyone to live through struggles of being in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the struggle against decadence, is there kind of an ethical call here as well, would you say?
I think ethics is a consequence of it. But here we move on the level of ontology. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's more, of course, Heidegger and Heideggerian tones run under this this theme. Mm-hmm. And so ethics is only the consequence. So to take certain action or to refuse certain action is the consequence of our ontological state. So first we have to somehow process the struggle against decadence. We have to somehow embrace this elan against decadence in on the level of ontology, and then we can act. So Christianity doesn't play a role of a moral agent here, not in the first instance, not in the first place. The first is the level of ontology. And of course, what's decadence on the level of ontology? That's Heideggerian boredom, that's life which for intellectuals, which is not reflected, but for those who are not intellectuals, it's a life which moves only from Patočka says on the on insisting on life, that we have to survive, on the survival. That's decadence. If we keep living just to survive, if we defend our life, if we accept our life as it is in order to survive. But he says, Patočka says, sometimes the greatest thing in life you can do is to give up life freely and voluntarily. to become a sacrifice. But of course, yeah, this is very, very problematic, very, again, very enigmatic part of his thought. But yeah, the point is that Christianity enables humans to struggle against this ontological decadence.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you. Okay. I wanna talk about problematicity and then the solidarity of the shaken, which are kind of two pretty provocative theses in Patochka's work. And so in your book, you're kind of arguing that theology on the one hand is kind of a discipline, but then also perhaps kind of the Christian community or those within kind of practicing their Christian faith, that these sort of sectors can benefit from these ideas of problematicity and solidarity of the shaken. So what exactly does Patochka mean by these is the first question. And then another question is how do you think that the Christian community mm-hmm. might kind of absorb or apply these ideas beneficially?
So problematicity is basically what we've been describing just now, that we realize that our situation in the world, our situation of being in the world is peculiar, that we grapple with our finitude, that we grapple with the meaning of everything what we are doing. We grapple with the question whether everything has a meaning or not, whether history has a meaning or not. That's the state of problematicity. There's the state of constant questioning of that what is. And I think theology, now on the academic level, on the intellectual level, can learn a lot from this consciousness of problematicity. Because sometimes theology acts as asking questions while knowing answer beforehand. You know, we ask questions about this or that, but we know the solution, and we will tell you at the end of the book. So I think Patochka's sense of problematicity is a very good methodological tool for theology, how to avoid being flawed and being intellectual travesty. So that's one thing. The second thing, of course, is the ontological level of problematicity, that we really live in a problematic world. That's our daily experience. But also our being, this problematicity is within us. It's not just the outside world which attacks us with those questions. The question of finitude, grappling with finitude, the question of meaning, that's our inner struggle. So problematicity is a kind of, lived experience everyone has, even though not everyone needs to reflect on it. So that's somehow our pre-reflective state. And then those who reflect on this problematicity, or those who somehow process this problematicity in a Christian community, for instance, they are united in something what Patochka calls the solidarity of the shaken. This shakenness, this being shaken, refers again back to grappling with finitude, being in a peculiar situation in the world, being thrown into the world. And those who somehow work out through this experience, they experience certain solidarity among themselves, even though this solidarity is not a typical kind of solidarity. It's not necessarily a confraternity. It's not political opinions. It's not ethnicity, it's not nationality what creates this solidarity. Mm-hmm. It's just this very naked experience of being shaken in the world, what has capability to put people of various narratives, various identities, various opinions together and somehow create a community. And I think this is pretty instructive for Christianity, actually, for ecclesiology, for the way the church as the expression of the Christian community could look like. And this is also something what I try to develop in my coming book, Christianity After Christendom, that the solidarity of the shaken could be taken as the basic ecclesiological concept, how to actually build up community without the solidity of the content, but based on a common experience of all human beings, because this kind of solidarity of the shaken creates something universal, but doesn't negate particularities of everyone who is involved. Because of course, we can have many interpretations, but this being shaken somehow, this naked experience is there for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this solidarity as kind of an ecclesiological principle, that's really, really good stuff. I think too, we could even move beyond sort of the church as being kind of a avenue of solidarity, even to kind of what Pope Francis, you know, talks about is like the human family, that there's a solidarity, you know, beyond that's sort of maybe cemented in a certain way within the church walls, but even extends kind of beyond the church walls to those who are, you know, who are not a part of the Christian community. I want to turn to for our last question on Patochka, his idea of sacrifice, because I know late in his life he writes a great deal about this, especially what he calls, right, the sacrifice for nothing. And it's perhaps not totally coincidental that, you know, his own death and kind of the circumstances in which it happens, which you alluded to early on, it falling after kind of this hours long investigation or interrogation by the secret police. But perhaps his own death, in other words, could kind of be interpreted as a sort of sacrifice. But as far as his idea of sacrifice and the sacrifice for nothing, what would you say is kind of the main thrust here for Patochka?
Mm-hmm. Of course, the theme of sacrifice in Patochka is huge. It's relatively well researched. There are many, many articles, many studies on sacrifice for nothing. And of course, there is also a debate, what does it mean? I think on which we all agree is that for Patochka, sacrifice is outside the economy of exchange. What does it mean? That when I sacrifice something in order to get something else, I sacrifice my life in order to get the life eternal. I sacrifice some money to get things. So this is the economy of exchange. And Patochka says this is not what sacrifice, what sacrifice in the proper sense of the word is about. And again, he refers to Christianity in this respect. He refers to the event of Christ, even though he avoids naming Jesus of Nazareth as his example. But it's when you read those texts on sacrifice, you know that the one who is discussed is Jesus of Nazareth, the promised mm-hmm. Christ. So that's also very, very interesting to see this dynamic, this tacit inspiration from theology in Patochka's own thinking about sacrifice, which in his own writings is not necessarily theological, but from which theologians certainly can take inspiration. And the sacrifice for nothing then means no economy of exchange, but what is it then? Yeah, it's what means this nothing? So it could mean like for no thing, that you sacrifice but you get nothing back. What doesn't mean is that nihilism, it's not nothing of nihil, it's not sacrifice which evaporates in nothingness. It is sacrifice for nothing is that this sacrifice has the moment of sacrifice, the movement of sacrifice, in Patochka's opinion, if it's authentic, has the intrinsic value in itself. You don't need anything else to add to it to make sacrifice full. And of course, there he means that, yeah, the one who commits sacrifice, for instance, Jesus of Nazareth, basically at the moment of that sacrifice, he changes nothing. Yeah. The whole passion narrative is about is an attempt to somehow save Jesus from this sacrifice, right? You can just say that you are not Messiah. You can just say this or revoke that, and you will be fine. Everything will be fine. But then, yeah, even though that moment changes nothing, then those who witness this sacrifice, that could mean for them that everything is changed, everything is different. Hmm. And yeah, sacrifice for nothing is really a huge topic, which is very difficult to somehow to interpret. But I think it's a kind in our world, which is where we hear the inflation of the world of sacrifice. You have to sacrifice this to get a good job. You have to sacrifice that to go to the university to be good at that. That's not sacrifice. Sacrifice is really ultimate, irreversible. Something for nothing, in a sense that it brings nothing. It brings nothing, but it can change everything.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And yeah, as you said, I know it, the discussion of sacrifice opens up a whole, treasure chest of kind of conversations that have happened around this topic in recent decades. But yeah, as we close, I want to give you a chance to kind of plug any projects you have that are in the works. And you mentioned this book you have dropping in a couple of weeks. And I know you also have a forthcoming project that you co-edited on Jean-Yves Lacoste coming out pretty soon with us at Whippenstock. So I just want to give you an opportunity to kind of maybe share about these or any other kind of projects you have coming down the line.
Well, thank you. The main thing now is the book, the second monograph, which I already mentioned. The title reads Christianity After Christendom, Heretical Essays in Philosophical Theology. And in this book, I basically summarize some main perspectives on what Christianity could potentially be in several philosophical readings, and then in a kind of debate with Patočka, or continuing dialogue with Patočka and Emmanuel Falk and others, I try to formulate this this idea of Christianity after Christendom a bit better. What does it actually mean? And as already mentioned, this sentence from Patočka's Heretical Essays is really crucial there. But it's already closed project. It's going to be published, or it's going to appear on the market in a couple of weeks, in sometime in October. So you can check that if you are interested. But currently I'm beginning with a new writing project, and that's something for which I have working title Towards a Credible Theological Grammar. And my main focus is the theme of finitude, embodiment, and the world as theological categories. And I'm trying to develop something I call it credible theological grammar.
Lovely, yeah. Am I right in thinking that Jean-Luc Nancy and Gianni Vattimo sneak into this book that's dropping in a couple of weeks?
Absolutely. We haven't talked about Jean-Luc Nancy today a lot, but Jean-Luc Nancy is a very important thinker for me. And I would say he would also enjoy a conversation with Jan Patočka, because they speak about very similar themes from a bit different perspectives, but they would definitely enjoy conversation together. I really like to read Jean-Luc Nancy alongside Jan Patočka, because I find both of them as just amazing thinkers.
Sure. Okay, so as we close, where can people kind of find you or learn more about your work?
So one place where you can find me is the website of our university, KU Linz. Then you can follow my work day by day on my Twitter account under my name, Martin Kocsi. And I also have my personal website with a bit strange address, philosophy.eu. But that we can perhaps put to some comments under this podcast, yes, because that might be easier than for our listeners to find me online.
Sure. Yeah, no, I will leave a link to that website, to your personal website, in the show notes, as well as links to all of your books. But yeah, I want to say thank you, Martin, very much for taking some time to chat about Jan Patočka. It's been really delightful. And also, I hope that you have a great rest of your paternity leave, and best wishes on this new project that you're working on.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for doing this Patochka booth. I find it absolutely amazing, and I'm looking forward to hearing other guests on this podcast, and I'm sure it will be a great success. Thank you.